You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody. Carl Stern here for the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show. Available at WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com, also over at my website, WhenItWasCool.com. Hope you'll come join me over there where I have an archive right now of 2,000 shows, right at 2,000 shows, dealing with not just pro wrestling history, but retro pop culture as well. If you're into old TV, movies, toys, music, comic books, any type of old retro pop culture, we probably have a show over there for you. And you can check us out. We have Patreon packages starting at $1. Hope you'll bookmark our website. Check it out, whenitwascool.com. In our rotation of classic wrestling shows, we like to do a different theme every week to keep things fresh and different and interesting. We are up to the segment called From the Pages of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And this is where we go through Dave Meltzer's old biographies, obituaries, history pieces that have been published in the pages of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. I've gone through and found all these so you don't have to spend time looking them up yourself. And today we're going to talk about the death and career and life of Gorilla Monsoon. And so this is going to be kind of interesting to me as well. Gorilla Monsoon, as a wrestler, was before my time. When I started watching wrestling, he was a backstage personality, of course, whom the gorilla position is named after in pro wrestling. He's also a commentator for WWF shows. He part-owned World Wrestling Council and later became president, you know, the on-screen figurehead president of the WWF. I knew him best as the, you know, the great comedic duo of Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan. They were a great comedic announcing duo. So he was also a highly reputed wrestler. I mean, he actually had a legit amateur wrestling background, was a big guy from back in the day, and also had one of the most memorable names in pro wrestling. When you say Gorilla Monsoon, well, there's no question about it. That guy's going to be a pro wrestler. So I remember this obituary when it came out at the time, but I don't guess I've revisited it since it was published. So let's learn about Gorilla Monsoon. This was published October 18th, 1999, in the pages of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Dave Meltzer writes, Bob Gino Morella, who under the classic ring name Gorilla Monsoon was a fixture in pro wrestling world for four decades, passed away officially about 6:15 a.m. on October 6, 1999, at his home in Mooresville, New Jersey, at the age of 62. Morella had been in poor health and nearly passed away more than 1 year ago, but made a strong recovery. His condition took a turn for the worst after a mild heart attack on September 19, 1999, causing complications from diabetes to worsen. Those close to him noted that he went out like a man's man, and that he would have been able to stay alive being constantly hooked up to a pacemaker to regulate his heartbeat and on kidney dialysis, but rather than have to live out his life being unable to leave the house as a, quote, house vegetable, as he termed it, he made the call that it was time to check out about 10 days before his death. He took himself off dialysis and died a slow death. He came home on the afternoon of... He came home on the afternoon of... October the 5th, 1999, largely to die in peace after being hospitalized in Philadelphia. Morella's career in pro wrestling, which began in 1959 after being a three-sport star in college and an Olympic hopeful in wrestling, took on many forms. In the early 1960s, he was marketed as Gino Morella, a huge man for that era with some agility. He was marketed as a friendly, clean-cut babyface, local college sports hero for promoters Pedro Martinez and Frank Tunney in Buffalo, Cleveland, and Toronto areas, where Italian babyfaces were popular. Gorilla Monsoon, one of the most famous heels of the 1960s, was created by Vince McMahon Sr. in 1963. With his immense size and one of the all-time great ring names, became one of the biggest names in the business. As with most big men in the profession, because the stress on the joints of a big man is much greater than the normal sized wrestler, his in-ring prime wasn't as long as some of his contemporaries. As one of the few educated men in the pro wrestling industry in those days, he rose to a position of power, eventually being a co-owner simultaneously of two of the most successful offices in the world, Capital Sports out of Washington, D.C., Worldwide Wrestling Federation, where he largely ran the television tapings for years, and Capital Wrestling, no relation except Morella was a minority stockholder in both, out of San Juan, Puerto Rico, World Wrestling Council. In the early 1970s, he also worked as the manager and frequent tag team partner of WWWF champion Pedro Morales. In the 1980s, after retiring from the ring in 1979 and being just about the only name wrestler in history never to come back from retirement and selling his stock in both companies, he gained probably his most national fame as the announcer on World Wrestling Federation television pay-per-view shows as the unflappable straight man for Jesse Ventura and Bobby Heenan. In recent years, with health failing and his spirit somewhat taken away from him with the tragic death of his son, WWF referee Joey Morella, in a July 4, 1994 auto accident at the age of 30, he had an on-air role as the figurehead WWF president and once a week came to the Titan Studios to voice over matches for the international WWF telecast. Born Robert James Morella on June 4, 1937, he grew up in Rochester, New York, and was a huge man by the standards of the time. While this would sound strange today, in the 1950s, there was virtually no such thing as a 250-pound high school student. With his size, he was an all-city football star at Thomas Jefferson High School on both offensive and defensive line, and a local shot put and discus champion as well as area heavyweight wrestling champion. He went to Ithaca College, a Division III school in upstate New York. By this time, he was 6'5" and more than 300 pounds, and at that size may have been the largest college football player in the late 1950s, playing both offensive and defensive line, and setting school records in both shot put and discus that stood well into the 1960s. He earned degrees in both physical education and was on the dean's list. With his size and power, wrestling was his best sport. And as a senior in 1959, he went all the way to the Division I finals in Ames, Iowa, placing second in the heavyweight division, losing to Oklahoma State's Ted Ellis. It should be noted that another huge wrestling star, Michigan State's Ted Woodland, Tim, Mr. Wrestling Woods, placed second at 191 pounds in the same tournament. He represented the U.S. as a national team member in several international meets in Greco-Roman wrestling, but was beaten out by another future pro wrestler, Dale Lewis, for a shot at the 1960 Olympic team. Bad knees, which already slowed his mobility, kept him from being drafted by the NFL. His 18-second pin in college is still a school record for the fastest win and led to what his gimmick during most of his quick wins and when he got older, quick count-out losses to build up heels for title shots. In 1973, he was inducted into the Ithaca College Sports Hall of Fame. He received his teaching credential, but with his size, which made him almost a freak in the world at the time, he figured there was a lot more money in pro wrestling. He started as a teacher in Rochester, New York, after graduating college, but only lasted a few months before being offered more money to wrestle. Martinez debuted as a local sports hero babyface in late 1959 at the old Rochester War Memorial Auditorium, drawing a crowd of 6,000 fans, about four times the usual attendance in the building, pinning Pancho Lopez in a matter of seconds. His background as a legitimate athlete, and more so his huge size as 300 pounders who weren't obese in those days could be counted on the fingers of one hand, kept him high on the cards in his days as the babyface Gino Morella. Wrestling mostly in cities like Rochester, Buffalo, Cleveland for Martinez, and in Ontario for Frank Tunney. But he was not cut out to play the face role, which seemed like a natural, legit college sports star in those days. He was too big, too powerful to sell believably to wrestlers of that era, so he was limited to doing short matches, which had no drama, and going into cities week after week doing one-minute squashes gets old as well. He was also badly nearsighted. Morella went on his first tour of Japan in the spring of 1963 in one of the early World League, the precursor to today's Champion Carnival tournaments, promoted by Ricky Dozan as the youngest foreigner on a tour that included a crew of superstars at the time of Killer Kowalski, Pat O'Connor, Haystacks Calhoun, Cowboy Bob Ellis, Sandor Szabo, and the masked Killer X, who was Frankie Townsend. He was nicknamed the White Elephant, the Human Typhoon. And on the same tour highlighted by Giant Baba's return from the U.S., the two had a famous singles match, which Baba won, but was notable for Monsoon using a giant swing on Baba. Kowalski was impressed with Morella's potential and introduced him to his friend Bobby Davis, the top heel manager for Vince McMahon Sr. Gorilla Monsoon, with the Monsoon being a takeoff from his Japanese Typhoon nickname, was introduced to the world in the late summer of 1963 by McMahon. Davis, manager of Buddy Rogers at the time, brought him in to be one of the first in a long line of huge monster heels who would challenge Bruno Sammartino, who had just won the WWWF Championship from Buddy Rogers. At the time, he was the second largest true wrestling star of the era, only Haystacks Calhoun being larger. By the 1970s, men like Andre the Giant and Chris Taylor were significantly larger than Monsoon, with Buddy Rogers largely on the shelf due to heart problems. Gorilla Monsoon was introduced with a storyline about Davis traveling to Manchuria to investigate the legend of this Neanderthal missing link-like man-beast who could crunch anyone at will. He arrived, finding the supposed 6'7", 400-pound man wading nude in a stream, not knowing a word of English. Somehow, through an interpreter, he convinced the man to come with him to the United States and introduced him as the man who destroyed the legendary Antonino Rocca in less than 3 minutes. Rocca, the biggest drawing card for promoters, McMahon and Toots Mont in the 1950s, had been phased out of the top and left. And backers started a new company with Rocca's the top draw, which was running opposition Capital Sports at the time. All sorts of colorful, made-up stories hyped his arrival, with him going on television, squashing one hapless foe after another in seconds. While Sammartino had faced Gino Morella previously, although not in the WWF territory, their first meeting was actually a rush job. Bruno Sammartino was scheduled to have a long-awaited rematch against Buddy Rogers, who he had won the title from on May 17, 1963, in 48 seconds in Madison Square Garden before a sellout crowd of more than 18,000 fans. There are disputes as to whether or not Rogers suffered a heart attack shortly before the first Sammartino match and went to the ring and just got it over with in seconds. Bruno Sammartino has always claimed that the story wasn't true, citing that commissioned doctors would not have allowed him in the ring if that were the case. There's little question, based on the fact Rogers had wrestled so few matches during that time leading to and after the match, almost all tag team matches, and in virtually every match he was only in the ring 1 minute max, and that he never wrestled San Martino in a rematch despite its huge gate potential, and after late August disappeared from wrestling for more than 3 years until resurfacing another promotion that he was in poor health at the time.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, before I introduce the principals of this next match, I'd like to introduce to you at ringside, without a question of doubt, one of the greatest heavyweight boxing champions of all time, Muhammad Ali!
And a roar of the crowd for Muhammad Ali. Muhammad taking a long, keen look here at the action at the wrestling ring.
Soon to enter this ring, here he is, the winning bell of New Jersey, in black, with the red stripe, the all-Asiatic champion, at 312 pounds, Gorilla Monsoon!
Gorilla Monsoon looked out as the crowd attacks Monsoon from behind. Up under the neck now, Monsoon coming on strong, measuring the man. Sukuna obviously dazed. Monsoon has him on one side, chops him up, and out goes Baron Mikel Sukuna. And there's Muhammad Ali standing up, pointing his finger at Gorilla Monsoon. Wait just a minute. Ali has his jacket off. He has his tie off. What is he going to do? Muhammad Ali is going to commit suicide here. Ali, look at this, Ali's coming in the ring, and Muhammad Ali is in the ring. Ali taking his shoes off, apparently he wants to go round and round with Gorilla Monsoon. A big, big mistake on the part of the boxing heavyweight champion. What's going to happen here? Muhammad going to stick him, trying to stick with a quick left. Muhammad now backing up, doing a little bit of dancing, not too much. Did you see Gorilla Monsoon circling around? Now Muhammad just stay there. Muhammad, you see, with his hands down by his side, at any moment that lightning-like speed of Muhammad Ali could make itself evident here against 400-pound Gorilla Monsoon. Monsoon with another little jab there. Ali's not finding his mark at all. Muhammad, oh, look at this! Airplane spin! One round around, down he goes, and there's Gorilla Monsoon, who could do anything in the world he wanted to at the moment. Monsoon could do anything to Ali. Ali dazed. Ali shaken, but still wants more. No, he doesn't either. Muhammad Ali has learned a lesson here the hard way. Muhammad said he could beat any professional wrestler any time. I believe he learned here at this moment. And he cannot take Gorilla Monsoon, nor possibly could he take anyone else of the caliber of Monsoon. But now they're taking him back to the dressing room.
The San Martino Rogers match, scheduled for October 4th, 1963, was moved from Madison Square Garden outdoors to Roosevelt Stadium in Jersey City, New Jersey, because of the expectations of a record-setting crowd and gate wrestling behind Bruno Sammartino's popularity and strong local television. In New York, wrestling aired in prime time from 9 to 11 p.m. on both Thursday and Saturday nights, and was doing big business in the area. Just a few weeks before the show, it was announced locally that due to heart problems, Buddy Rogers had been pulled from the show, and a tournament was held on television to create a top contender, sponsored by Ring Magazine, which saw newcomer Gorilla Monsoon destroy everyone in less than 1 minute, including the top heel, Buddy Austin, in the finals. A bloody Bruno Sammartino lost by DQ in that first meeting before a crowd of about 18,000 fans. Since Rogers was announced as the foe, ticket prices were jacked up, so the gate was the largest ever for the New York area, perhaps, since at least the Jim Lundos days. a rematch on October 21st, 1963, which went to a double countout, drew an even bigger crowd, selling out Madison Square Garden, which at this point was something Sammartino was doing with regularity. Finally, on November 18, 1963, before another sellout, Bruno Sammartino got his win, and the Monsoon feud moved to the secondary markets on the circuit like Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and Washington, D.C. Boston at that point wasn't part of the territory. It became a WWWF city in 1965, and Bruno Sammartino versus Gorilla Monsoon was the first major match at the old Boston Gardens. Monsoon and Kowalski became the top heel tag team in the territory, winning the old U.S. tag team titles from Brute Bernard and Skull Murphy before losing them to the Tolos brothers. Monsoon later held the same belts in 1965 with partner Bill Watts. He remained a top heel until late 1965. He went back to Japan in September 1966 as Gorilla Monsoon, the top heel on the tour, drawing sellout crowds in Sapporo and Sendai for the international heavyweight title matches with Giant Baba, losing the first by countout and the second by pinfall, although the first fall in the two out of three falls match in their second meeting was by DQ. He teamed with huge George Man Mountain Cannon as an 800-pound tag team to lose to Giant Baba and Mishiaki Yoshimura in an all-Asian tag team title match. He toured Japan twice more, once in 1969 in the World League tournament, and came back in 1972 for the World League, where he went to the finals in a tournament that included such foreign names as Abdullah the Butcher, Joe LaDuke, Dick Murdoch, and Jose Lothario. On May 12th in Tokyo, he lost to Giant Baba with the Boston Crab submission in the third fall. Said to be a talented singer, while on that tour, he crooned at Giant Baba and Miss Baba's wedding. After the death of Joe Toots Mont, who is McMahon's partner in Capital Sports, manager and former wrestling great Wild Red Berry and Phil Zacco, the Philadelphia promoter, were given the option of each buying 25% of Mont's 50% of Capital Sports. Berry declined and the offer went to Morella, although McMahon made some maneuverings to where he maintained 50%, but got Arnold Scollin, his most trusted ally in the company, in for 10%, and Zacco and Morella each owned 20%. In later years, Willie Ginsberg, a Northeast boxing promoter, whose figurehead president of the WWF during the 1970s, also owned a piece of the company. Gorilla Monsoon, this time managed by Berry, returned in 1967 for another three-match series with Bruno Sammartino. The first meeting on February 27th, which Monsoon won via countout, drew a sellout. The second meeting on March 27th drew another sellout, going to the 11 p.m. curfew draw. Legend has it this match was going to go 90 minutes, although they used to heavily shade the time in those days and exaggerate the time of long matches. There's no reliable source as to how long it was, other than it definitely was less than 60 minutes. The third meeting on May 15th, which Bruno Sammartino won in a Texas death match, drew just shy of capacity, largely blamed on the fact that in the draw match, Sammartino had Monsoon down for a two count when the bell rang, and the fans hated the finish. Monsoon then became a headline tag team with Toru Tanaka before making his babyface turn in late 1969. Bruno Sammartino was wrestling a television match. It was being double-teamed by two heels when, surprisingly, Monsoon made the save. Subsequently, Monsoon was wrestling, and after a run-in, was being double-teamed, and Sammartino saved him, saying he owed him a favor. Although I don't have records of this, it is likely the heels were Toru Tanaka and Mitsu Arakawa, and they became a frequent tag team. Monsoon's role at this point was to often lose singles matches, almost always by countout as opposed to pinfall, to wrestlers being built up for matches against Sammartino and later Pedro Morales. While the Monsoon of the 1960s couldn't speak a word of English, the Monsoon of the 1970s was a very literate, well-spoken interview. While Pedro Morales was champion from 1971 to 1973, Monsoon was used as his manager to give interviews in English, often teamed with him, and to be attacked by heels to set up a grudge opponent for the champion. His Manchurian background was totally forgotten, and he became the 400-pound New Jersey Giant from Wheelborough, where he lived until just recently moving to Mooresville. Although his physique changed noticeably, he slowed in the ring greatly from his prime. If he worked undercard matches against wrestlers not being groomed for a title shot, they were generally very short squash wins. While McMahon Sr. handled the booking, Morella was his top assistant, and on occasion was his policeman, the man to physically handle any problems with other wrestlers. The McMahon Sr. booking was usually simple. The cards were handled by title matches. The top of the cards, rather, were headlined by title matches with revolving heels brought in against the face champion. The heels would get either one, two, or three title shots against the champion in all the major arenas, based generally on how well tickets moved. McMahon would book the top two or three matches on the show, and Morella would fill out the undercards. Unlike today's week-to-week booking, in those days, Sr. and Morella generally had the main events in the big arenas tentatively booked 10 months to 1 year out. In 1974, Carlos Colon, Victor Jovica, and Victor Quiñones started Capitol Wrestling in Puerto Rico. In the early days, behind Colon as the top draw, were on fire, including one period of 13 straight sellouts at a 30,000-seat Bayamon Stadium in the infancy of the promotion. With the kind of money available, headliners could earn $3,000 to $5,000 working a weekend, and the climate was awesome in the winter for people living their lives in the Northeast. Even though he had slowed down from his prime, Gorilla Monsoon came in to reprise his role as a heel against the much smaller natives. He came in almost every other weekend for a few years, and he also worked headline matches as a heel against the likes of Andre the Giant, Bruno Sammartino, who did a rare job for Monsoon on July 22, 1978, in San Juan, losing the WWC North American heavyweight title, and even Bob Backlund. Eventually, Jovica's brother sold his stock, and Morella owned 10% of the office for many years. With Morella involved, he was the liaison for WWF talent. As every big star from the WWF in those days, he booked into Puerto Rico for a big money weekends. Quiñones and Monsoon became close during that period, and they basically had a father-son relationship. Monsoon's most famous angle, however, came in June of 1976, when he was long past his prime as a headliner. And it's not even clear as to why it happened, because it built up to nothing involving him. Muhammad Ali was hyping a mixed match against Antonio Inoki, which was promoted as similar to the biggest boxing matches of the time, as a closed-circuit spectacular. Ali came to a WWF taping in Allentown, Pennsylvania, to shoot an angle, which eventually appeared on television sportscasts throughout the country and nearly every wrestling television show in the United States. Monsoon, who virtually never wrestled on TV by this point because he had already made his name and was more valuable backstage, was wrestling his longtime friend Baron Mikel Cicluna. After a few seconds, Ali, introduced before the match, hit the ring and threw jabs at Monsoon. Perhaps because Monsoon was such a huge man, he dwarfed Ali, who at the time was considered a large, agile athlete. They used to get the idea that wrestlers were bigger and tougher than the most famous fighters in the world. Ali circled and jabbed, and Monsoon picked him up in an airplane spin, with Ali making facial expressions that would make Steve Regal proud, and gently placed him on the mat, with Ali doing a great job of selling, particularly for someone who'd never done pro wrestling. Gorilla Monsoon condescendingly said that while Ali may be great as a boxer, he'd be nothing in a fight with a wrestler, saying that he could have grabbed a hold at any time at will and broken any bone in Ali's body. Debuting his phrase that he used on television throughout the 1980s, he doesn't know a wrist lock from a wrist watch, For the public, it was felt that nobody knew Inoki, and at the time, nobody believed a wrestler could beat a boxer, let alone Ali, who was the ultimate boxing legend of the generation, kind of hilarious in hindsight. So they needed to do an angle. I wonder why Dave said that. Kind of hilarious in hindsight that Ali was the ultimate boxing legend of the generation. That's largely exactly true. That's interesting. Somebody needs to pin Dave down on that and see if he's an Ali hater or something. I don't know. Anyway, he goes on to say, so they needed to do an angle showing Ali selling for a wrestler, showing that he could beat a boxer. In the 1970s and early 1980s, he ran backstage at television. He ran the backstage at television, it should say. Before the days when referees would have earpieces to get messages to tell wrestlers when it was time to go home, in the more archaic days, the job fell to Gorilla Monsoon. Monsoon was visible to the referee, wrestlers, and timekeeper in what later became known in wrestling as the gorilla position. Basically, wrestling's terminology for the on-deck circle. And when he took his glasses off, it was the signal it was time to end the match. He got his final run of singles main events, challenging and putting over superstar Billy Graham at most of the major arenas when he was WWF champion in 1977. In 1979, he announced if he lost a match in Philadelphia that he would retire, and lost that match and never wrestled again. He also wrote a column for a Philadelphia newspaper, and perhaps his most noteworthy column came a few years later when he wrote the obituary for Superstar Graham's death of cancer. Of course, Superstar Graham was still alive at the time. Still alive at the time I'm writing this, over 40 years later. Even when Gorilla Monsoon got the word Superstar Graham was alive, he never wrote a retraction. A few years later, when Billy Graham, with a shaved, bald head, returned to challenge then-champion Bob Backlund, the series drew a huge response, three straight sellouts in Madison Square Garden, but didn't draw well in Philadelphia because word among the fans in that city was that the real Graham had died and that the WWF was trying to sell an imposter to the fans. Morella was eventually bought out by Vince McMahon Jr. in 1982, but in return got a 10-year contract, which gave him an announcing job and 1.5 times preliminary money on every WWF house show, even though he never had to leave his home, which turned out to be a very lucrative deal when the WWF was running close to 1,000 shows per year. If you figure prelim wrestlers in that era were doing about $2,000 per week, figure 1.5 times that, multiplied by three house shows per night, and you realize he had huge money years after selling the company when Titan flourished in its 1980s heyday. He became best known nationally during this period, generally hosting Wrestling Challenge, the WWF's B show, many NBC Saturday night's main events and pay-per-view shows, with either Jesse Ventura or Bobby Heenan as his co-host. Gorilla Monsoon was not a good wrestling announcer and liked to show off some of his knowledge of body parts, which came off as arrogant to many, but played a good straight man for a comedy foil. As part of a promise Junior had made to Senior, the partners he bought, Morella, Zacco, and Scollin, had to be taken care of as long as they were alive. Since his health problems, Morella generally went into Titan Studios once a week on Thursdays to reminisce about the old days and to announce on WWF International Broadcast. He didn't need to do it, but he liked it because it gave him a need to get out of his house and be productive. His funeral on October 9, 1999, in Willingboro, New Jersey, was attended by none of the current WWF wrestlers except Miguel Perez and Juan Rivera, that's Savio Vega. Many of the top names, including Steve Austin, Mark Calloway, sent flowers. Some close to him were upset by the almost complete absence of current generation stars, but the fact is there weren't many friends of his generation. The old-timers, the likes of Cicluna, Dave Yohannan, Johnny Roz, and the Savoldi family were there, as was Bobby Heenan, who remained a close friend to him long after they were on opposite sides of the political fence. Much of the front office, in particular the television production division, was there in force, and Vince McMahon Jr. gave the eulogy, and a letter written by Jesse Ventura was taped to his casket. Jr. also called him one of the finest men I ever knew, gave Morella probably the nicest send-off on television on SmackDown of any wrestler of the past. And so it's kind of interesting to note in Dave's obituary of Gorilla Monsoon that he didn't make any mention of the angle he did with Vader when he came in to help put Vader over. Real strong, Vader attacked him when he was WWF president, but then Vader went out with a scheduled shoulder surgery, and when he came back, he had lost all the momentum he had gotten from attacking Gorilla Monsoon. I'm surprised that there was no mention of that in there. And I have to admit, that whole that little jab, no pun intended, he threw against Ali was kind of took me out there. I wonder if Ali wasn't the ultimate boxer of that generation. I wonder who Dave thinks it was. I'm a huge Muhammad Ali fan, and that definitely took me aback. But Gorilla Monsoon was, I mean, his time as a wrestler, that was way before my time as watching pro wrestling as a fan. Certainly he was the name alone was very recognizable. It's kind of one of those names like Sergeant Slaughter or something like that that's immediately recognizable, Hacksaw Duggan or Hulk Hogan. I mean, when you hear those names, you know that that's a professional wrestler. I only saw, again, you know, I started getting syndicated WWF television in the mid to late 1980s, and so Gorilla Monsoon was, of course, announcer by that time and all over those programs. And, you know, he never did any regional territorial wrestling down where I watched it, where I grew up. He was a Northeast guy and a Puerto Rico guy, so I never got to see him. So it's interesting to learn a little bit of his background as a standout personality. Really most associated, of course, with the WWWF and later WWF. So that is from the pages of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer's obituary for Gorilla Monsoon. And next week we'll roll back around with another one of our rotation of shows. In the meantime, I hope you'll go over to my website, whenitwascool.com. Check us out over there. We're right on the verge of having 2,000 shows in our archive, many of those dealing with the history of professional wrestling. We do the Long Form History of Wrestling, which is a chronological coverage of pro wrestling. We're up into 1983 now, but we cover it all the way back to the Pioneer era in the 1800s. So you can listen to all those shows. We've done many, many biographies, many wrestling show reviews, so much more. Hope you'll go over and check us out at whenitwascool.com. Love to see you there. And until next week, I'm Carl Stern saying thank you from whenitwascool.com.
Walter tends to lie a lot, too. You didn't know that, did you? Yes, it was. You know, everyone on this platform could come up here tonight and stand for literally hours and tell stories, I'm sure, to the delight of everyone, but we're not afforded that kind of time. But I would like to tell one story, because there are only so many great lines that come from individuals in our business over a lifetime. And this is one of the great lines of all time, spoken by a gentleman that's sitting in this room. And I'm going to tell you who that is in just a moment. I'm going to take you back to the early 1970s, wrestling in Maple Leaf Gardens, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. At that time, both Vern Gagne's tape and our tapes were going into Toronto. So promoter Frank Tunney was utilizing talent from both ends of the country. So on a plane somewhere in the sky is flying Vern Gagne along with the tag team champions of the world, Pat Patterson and Ray Stevens, headed for a match in Toronto. Already in Toronto is their opposition. On the plane, Vern says to Pat, "First appearance for you guys tonight as the new champions. You've got to look good." Pat said, "Don't worry, we'll handle it." "Who are we wrestling?" "Wrestling Monsoon and Andre." How on earth are they going to look good against Monsoon and Andre? Well, we get into the ring. It had to be an awesome sight for any spectator to see Pat Patterson and Ray Stevens, these two beautiful blondes, both about 5'5", against 6'6" and 7'4". And we got the instructions from the referee, and the line is coming, folks. Pat said something to Andre in French, and Andre put that big ham hock over his mouth and staggered back laughing towards our corner. So the bell rang, and I went back to the corner. I said, "Andre, what did he say?" He said, "Pat said, let the little guy start." True story, Pat Patterson, is it not? I feel... That's a great line. Well, Bobo Brazil had some great lines, too. I'll tell you a quick one. Bobo and I wrestled one night in West New York. The publicity went out a week too late. It was literally a bomb scare. There was nobody there. Bobo gave me his patented snap mare and smother hold and whispered in my ear, "We got him, kid." You remember that, Bobo? All 38 of them we had, Bobo. But I feel very honored to be up here tonight with these esteemed inductees and to look out there and see the faces of the new generation of wrestling stars to come. And I see some very impressive individuals who you all met earlier on in the evening. And I look back over my career, 31 years, and you saw some of the things I accomplished, but there are other things. I have three lovely children, a beautiful home, and being a professional wrestler, how do you have those things and do what I did? You have to have an awful lot of help. Well, I had an awful lot of help. I had someone to raise those children and take care of that home. And tonight, you flatter and honor me at this induction ceremony. And I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart because this is the pinnacle of my career, no question about it. But not only for tonight, but for the rest of my life, I will honor and treasure the person that made it all possible, my wife, Maureen. Thank you very much.
WhenItWasCool.com is your source for the best in retro pop culture. When It Was Cool features articles and podcasts on retro TV and movies, toys, action figures, pro wrestling, food, video games, and more. Hit the Patreon button to support us and get instant access to hundreds of premium podcasts and features. Family friendly and fun. WhenItWasCool.com.